Thank you, Jack, for that reading. We want to welcome each of you here today who is visiting with us. And we always have so many who are visiting. We want to welcome those who are not members of the Churches of Christ, and we're especially happy to have you. There are a lot of you who are here in school who are not members of the Church of Christ, and yet here you are this morning among us and in our midst, and we're happy to have you. Tonight our meeting begins with Neil Pryor, and this whole next week is going to be one great feast. We're going to have some great times together studying about God and about Christ and enjoying the fellowship of other Christians. And we're looking forward to being together with you each night this coming week, tonight at 4 and 6, and then each night Monday through Friday at 5:30 and 7:30. That's right. You know, at certain stages in life, we learn to do certain things. You learn to walk when you're about, 12 to 14 months? You learn to talk when you're about 2? I was told Friday by a person who ought to know that we learn our identity, whether we're male or female. We learn that by the time we're 6. And I don't mean just learn that we are a man or a woman or a boy or a girl. She says we learn to accept that fact or reject it. And I was surprised to learn that that takes place by the time you're 6 years old. Of course, that explains to me a story that I heard about two little babies that had just been born in the hospital. One of them was there first in the nursery. He was a little boy. And the nurses wheeled in another one right beside him, and she was a girl. And she looked over and she said, "Hi." And he said, "Hi." She said, "What are you?" He said, "I'm a boy." She said, "Well, how can you tell whether you're a boy or not?" He said, "That's simple." And he pulled back his blanket and pointed down and said, "Blue booties." That kind of catch you coming back, doesn't it? Some people are deprived of certain experiences in their life that they should have experienced at a certain age, and their whole life is affected by it. They mature late. Let me tell you just very briefly about an example that is an example of this. There was a woman whom we all know and love who took into her home a girl who was 21 years of age. And this girl at 21 still was sucking her thumb. And when things did not go to please her, she would run and get up under a table and throw a temper tantrum and suck her thumb. Now that's when she was 21. One day this girl saw this woman sitting in a chair reading and holding her little tiny baby girl in her arms and reading a story to her. And she looked at this sight, and after the story was finished and the baby had been put down, this girl came up to the woman and said, "Would you please hold me and read to me?" And so the woman took her in her arms, a 21-year-old girl, and began reading her a story. The girl laughs about it now. She's married to a doctor. She looks back on those times when she was immature beyond description almost and says, "Well," she says, "I still have my times." But she said, "I at least laugh about it, and I've quit crawling onto the table and sucking my thumb." How old are you? Do you know? Can you tell how old you are? You know, you have to cut a tree down to tell how old it is. We cut one down over on the church property the other day, and I went out to see how old it was, and sure enough, you can tell, and you count those rings, and it was 20 years old. I'm glad we don't have to do people like that. You know, how old are you? Well, just a minute. You don't count people like that. You can tell in other ways. Are you of age? Well, it depends on whom you ask. If you ask the 15-year-old, he'd say, yeah, I'm of age. Look at all this hair. Look at these wheels. Look at this sissy bar, and look at this cat on the back with me. And look at all this money in my pocket. And I get to stay out until 12 o'clock, and you know, on and on. And he says, yeah, boy, I'm really of age. It amazes me how some people think that hair is a sign of age, or that lack of it is, Jack. Someone was talking about mustaches, and they said that one of our elders told me that his father had told him this little poem, "Twinkle, twinkle, little hair, how I wonder where you are. Up above that mammoth cave, why in the world don't you shave?" That's not really a sign of maturity at all, is it? If you ask parents when their children mature, the parents are tended to say never. You know, they never do think that you grow up. Recently, my father, even when I'm over 40 and he's over 70, almost 80 years old, he gave me some real good advice about buying a chainsaw. He said, "Now, son, you're going to cut your leg off sure as you buy one of those things." And and he checked back on me later to see if I had done it. But parents never think that children grow up. One parent called here to Harding a year or so ago and told his daughter to change her major from social studies to pre-med and said, "If you don't do it, just come home." Well, you know, that's not really right. This year, I think it was that some parents were in the room of their teenage daughter getting her ready for school, you know, and getting her all settled in. And the daddy said, "Now, my baby is used to having her way, and I expect you to give it to her." If I'd have been the roommate, I said, "Yeah, I'm going to give it to her." You know? And lo and behold, if the mama didn't then say, "Now, that fan has to go. If there's a fan in the room, my baby gets a cold." Well, parents seem to never think that we ever really get of age to turn off the fan or to make up our own minds about things. But you know, there comes a time when parents can't answer for you. And you're at that time pretty well right now. And I'm directing this primarily to the young people today. You're at that time in life when parents can't answer for you. You're going to have to answer some things for yourself. In John, the 9th chapter that Jack just read, there was a young man there of whom his parents said, "He is of age, he'll speak for himself." That's a potent statement. And the responsibility that was laid upon this young man, though the ulterior motive, although the motive may have been ulterior on the part of the parents, this responsibility that they put on this young man's shoulders fit him well, because he was of age. They said, "Ask him. He is of age. He'll speak for himself." Well, how do you know whether a person is of age or not? This young man, you can see, wore this mantle of responsibility real well, because you could tell that he was of age from four different things that come out here in his character. Number one, this young man showed that he was of age when he showed that he knew that he needed something. He knew that he was in need of something. Of course, circumstances had forced him into this conclusion. He was blind. He had been born blind. You know, blind people come to maturity in many respects a lot earlier than those of us who are seeing. This young man had been forced to the conclusion that he was blind. He had been forced to the conclusion that being blind, he needed help from other people. He had already resorted to begging. That's all that blind people had at that day. That's the only option that they had. And so this young man, you see, was in He was the, you might say, the recipient of an unfortunate incident. He was a blind person. And yet, look how fortunate he was in the sense that he came to understand one of the basic things of life, one of the basic attributes of maturity. He came to the realization that I can't make it on my own. Have you come to that realization yet? The realization that you can't make it on your own is the basic of life. This is what Jesus meant when he said in Matthew 5:12, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." What he was saying essentially was, blessed are those that know they can't make it on their own. This whole thing, you see, is interwoven all through the teachings of Jesus Christ. In this very chapter here, he talks about the blind and the seeing. And he makes the statement, "For this cause I have come into the world to bring judgment, that those who," listen, "for judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may become blind." What's he talking about? Well, he's just simply saying that I have come for judgment. I have come to force people to a crisis so that the smart alecks might learn that they don't know so much, and the people who realize they don't know much can be really made well. This is his whole mission. We find it all through his life. We find him talking about people who are well and who are sick. You find him saying the well have no need of a physician. It's the sick that do. Dr. Formby, people who think they're well don't come to you for treatment. People who are sick come for treatment. Jesus knew this universal practice and this universal awareness, and he makes this as the basis of another statement. The basis of it is this: the sick are the ones that need treatment, not the well. But he makes the conclusion, or draws the conclusion, that I have come to call the righteous, not sinners, or I have come to call sinners, not righteous, to repentance. Now, the principle is simply this: people are going to be called to Jesus Christ who know that they have need of something. He said, "I didn't come to call the righteous, but I've come to call sinners to repentance." Now, there aren't any righteous people in the world, but there are a whole lot of people who think they're righteous. There aren't any people who are self-sufficient, but there are a lot of people who think they are. And Jesus was simply saying, "I didn't come to spend my time calling people who don't believe they need me to come to me." He said, "I have come to give my time to those people who know they are lost and want to be saved." And the prime example of this, the illustration of it, is in Luke the 18th chapter, where Jesus told the parable about the Pharisee and the publican, or the tax collector. And he says he told this parable specifically for those who accounted themselves righteous and set everybody else at naught. And he told about the Pharisee standing there thanking God that he was not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or like this tax collector. He said, "I'm just glad I'm not like other folks." "Why," he says, "I fast twice a week to give a tithe of all that I get." While the old tax collector stood over there in the corner, beating his breast and saying, "Oh Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner." Jesus said that man went home to his home justified rather than this other one. You see, this is the whole issue of life. And when you come right down to it, this is the basic of life. Young people, I can say this without reservation. This is the first hurdle that you'll have to clear in coming to maturity. Have you cleared it yet? Or do you think that you've got it all together? You know, many of you come from homes where you think your mamas and daddies didn't know anything. You think they're dumbbells, dimwits, and ding-a-lings. And you just think, by the way, they're just totally square. Some of them are triangles. That's a square with something missing. That's right. You don't even give them the advantage of being a square, because you think that you know everything, and you've known everything really from about the time you were 14 or 15. And by the time you get to 16, you know everything. You suspected it at 15. And when you come to school here, you know what you're going to think? "Some of these teachers are ninnies. They're dumbbells. Oh, my. He doesn't know what he's talking about." Let me tell you something. By the time you take your first test, you're going to know you don't know what you're talking about. Some of these tests are going to curl your hair. But some of you come thinking really that you know everything there is to know, but you don't really. You've got a whole lot to learn. And I would say that this is your first major hurdle. This young man knew that he needed something. But the second thing that I know that indicates that he was maturing, or that he was mature, was that he was able to take instructions. It just simply says here, when he was reporting what had happened, they said, "What happened to you?" He said, "Well, the man that healed me said that he put mud on my eyes and he told me to go wash, and I went and washed, and now I see." Very simple. In fact, it was not only simple and specific, I suspect that it was a bit humiliating had the young man not known that he needed something. You know, humiliation is for those people who know they don't need anything. How would you like to go around, a grown man now, with mud all over your face and walking around looking for the pool of Siloam? How do you think he felt? Nobody had ever been healed by blindness like that before. But nobody had ever been healed by blindness before. But this young man was willing to take instructions. He was willing to take specific instructions. He was willing to take immediate action. He was willing to take action that was humiliating. But he didn't care. He had grown up. He was a mature young man. He was able to take instructions. Christ's instructions were to him something what like Elisha's instructions were to Naaman, the leper back in the Old Testament times. Naaman was a captain in the Syrian army, but he had leprosy. You know the story. He finally came to Elisha, and Elisha sent Gehazi out to talk to him. He didn't even go out himself. He just said, "Tell this man to go wash in the Jordan 7 times. Go dip 7 times, and his flesh will be clean." Well, Gehazi went out and told him, and well, it's like slapping Naaman in the face. He said, he went away in a rage. He just went away mad and angry. He said, "Why, I thought sure he'd come out here and wave his hands over the thing and call upon his God and stand before me, and then the place would be cleansed." And he said, "As far as dipping in water, the Abner and the Pharpar rivers back home are a whole lot better than this Jordan." And he just stomped off in a rage, uncontrollable, you know. One of his privates came up to him and said, "Sir, if he had told you to do some great thing, you would have done it, wouldn't you? Why don't you just go on and wash like he said and be clean?" And he stopped this man dead in his tracks. And in that one instant, Naaman grew emotionally from a little baby into a fine, mature person in just about 5 seconds. How about you? How old are you when it comes to taking instructions? All these regulations, being in at 10 o'clock at night, you say, "This is ridiculous," and you walk off in a rage. You come here, you know, to get your key, and they say, "Son, you got to go get a haircut." You say, "A haircut? If it's hair that's so important, I can go home and get my hair cut. Or if it's being in early, I've got rules at home, man. I came to get away from rules." But you know what somebody needs to say to you? "Now, if they had told you to do some great thing, you would have done it, wouldn't you? Like, why don't you be, editor of the Pedigene this year? Would you do that?" Oh, yeah, I'd be glad to do that. "Or why don't you run the school this year?" "Yes, I think I'll do that. Thank you." And you know, you think, well, surely, when I got here that they'd come out and Dr. Gaines would wave his hands all over me, and all of a sudden I'd be a mature person ready to walk in at least to the vice presidency. But that's not the way you get there. Maturity is shown by the way you're able to take instructions. You know, rebellion is not the road to maturity. Oh, I used to think it was. And I used to think that it was not only the road to it, I thought rebellion was the real thing itself. I thought you'd already arrived once you rebelled and were a nonconformist. I've told you about going to this big elite black tie, tux and tails concert in Memphis State in 1951. And we were given instruction, all music majors and everything else were given instruction to be there, you know, dressed accordingly. You know how I went? Blue jeans and a t-shirt and boots. Oh, I thought I had arrived. They're not going to tell me how to dress. I'm going to dress like I want to dress. I thought, boy, this is great, this thing of being mature. But But how pathetic I must have looked, because that's not the way you judge maturity. A girl was coming through the old clinic building. What do they call it now? Doesn't matter, but they were going through the old clinic. She was going through the old clinic building, you know, armed full of books, and here she came. And I was in there asking to see someone, and here she came with all these books, walking through there, waddling through. She had so many, and I said, "Hey, where are you going?" She said, "Oh, I'm going to class." And there was a great big sign right in front of her face that said, "Do not come through clinic building on way to class." I said, "Don't you see that sign?" She was a friend of mine. She still is. But I said, "Don't you see that sign?" And I took her by the arm. I said, look at that sign. She knew the sign was there, and her face just got as red. And I called all the people around, you know, were looking at her, and she was embarrassed. And we started laughing, fortunately. And I ushered her out of there, and I said, "Now, you do better than that next time." And she laughed and went on her way. And you know what? She has grown up. That didn't cause it, but it helped. Your ability to take instructions is one indication of whether or not you're growing up. But there's a third thing that he did that shows that he was growing up. He knew that something had been done for him. He said, "This man has opened my eyes." And the thing about it that's so beautiful, in a sense, he said, never before in the history of the world has it ever been heard that anybody opened the eyes of a man born blind. He thought he was unique. And I think that's something that is very necessary in our lives if we're going to grow up to be mature people. We're going to have to consider ourselves as a unique person. I don't mean that you go around with a chip on your shoulder and your nose in the air, not that kind of uniqueness, but that you have a unique worth that no one else has, really. You know, there's nobody else like you. You've heard of that Equitable Life Insurance advertisement. There's nobody else like you. You're just you. And every young person and old person alike, or whenever they come to this realization, you know, something has been done for me, and I possess something that nobody else possesses, then you yourself become a unique person. You become a person in your own right. You become a person who has something that perhaps no one else has. And you might not have much of anything, and there are some of you here who may feel very inferior, but if you'll look real closely, you'll be able to say like this young man, "You know, never before in the history of the world has there been somebody with just quite this same put together of things like I have. I've been put together in a way that nobody else has. And I'm glad to be who I am." And this young man thought he was unique. And you know what he did at the end of this story? He fell down and worshiped Jesus Christ in thanksgiving for what had been done for him. How old are you? Are you aware that something has been done for you? Are you old enough to realize that something has been done for you? This young man was. Have you come to the place that you appreciate your mother and daddy for what they've done for you? I was talking to a boy coming through the registration line the other Friday or Thursday. And he said to me, he took me aside and was talking about a friend of ours, a mutual friend whose home is like hell on earth. And I asked him, after he told me about the home of this person and how unfortunate and how that explains really so much of what she is. They made her, he said, they made her like she is, and they don't even know they've done it. I asked him, I said, "Are your parents Christians?" He said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "Really, for the first time in my life, I've come to appreciate what they are. I come to love them because of what they've done for me." And he said, "I didn't see it until after I saw what this girl's parents have done to her." Are you old enough to do that? Will you write any letters of appreciation to your mothers and daddies this year? Let's just scratch that. I know you won't. But that really probably isn't necessary. Will you want to write some letters of appreciation? That's what we're really talking about. The only letters you're going to write is for more money. I know. And they'll appreciate even that if you'll just say thanks for the money in advance, because they know you're not going to thank them after you get it. It's just that's just the way we are. But are you able to say thank you? Are you able, perhaps, at the end of this year to sit down and write a letter and say, thank you so much for what you've done for me. Well, are you able to thank your teachers in this school, in this church? Are you able to thank America for what's been done for you? Are you able to thank God for all that he's done for you? Do you love him for it? Can you stand in your room or kneel before your bed and just say, "Oh, Father, I thank you for having mercy on me. Thank you for giving me two eyes and two ears, for giving me two legs and arms, for giving me this opportunity, for blessing me." Well, that's a sign of maturity. Some people think they have it all themselves and that they haven't been given anything by anybody. But that isn't the case. But then there's a fourth thing that makes me know that this young man was maturing. First of all, he was old enough to know that he had to have something done for him. He needed some help. Secondly, he was old enough to, what was the second point? To follow instructions. Thirdly, he was old enough to know that something had been done for him and he was thankful. And then the fourth thing, he was old enough to tell what he knew. They said, "Ask him, he'll speak for himself." This young man was able to know something. He didn't know everything, but he did know something. He says, "I don't know everything." They asked, "Where is this man?" He said, "I don't know." And they asked him a couple of other questions. He said, "I don't know. This man's a sinner." He said, "I don't know whether he's a sinner or not." All the details about it, he didn't know, but he did know something. You know, in his development, this young man had failed to develop any eyes. And we don't know what caused it. But I'll tell you what he did develop during his developing years. He had developed some backbone. And I do believe, as well as I like to see, if I had to choose between having eyes and having backbone, I believe I would choose to have backbone. Would you? This young man was old enough and he was willing to stand up and say, "One thing I know," and that's what he mentions, "one thing I know. Whereas I was blind yesterday, today I can see." That was a personal testimony of something that had happened to him subjectively. But he also said of something that was objective, that was not just a personal testimony of subjective reality, it was a testimony of an objective fact. He said, "If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." And he stood up and made that confession. And you know what he did? He did it in the face of disfellowship. It had already been sent out, a letter, more or less, whether written or unwritten, had been sent out. Anyone who confesses Jesus to be the Christ is going to be put out of the synagogue. Now, his parents failed this test. When the people came and asked them, "Who do you think this Christ is?" and what happened, they said, "Well, you ask him. He's of age. Let him talk for himself. We're not going to tell you." And it said they said this because they were afraid of being put out of the synagogue. They failed the test. But you know why they failed? Because what had happened to somebody else other than themselves. It hadn't happened to them. But this boy didn't fail the test because he was telling about something that had happened to himself. His parents gave in to the peer pressure. This boy didn't. The peer pressure didn't get to him. He couldn't help but speak his convictions. Something had happened to him, and he had to tell whoever it was that asked him about it. He told them what had happened. "I've had my eyes opened. I know one thing. I was blind, and now I see. And I know also that if this man were not from God, he couldn't do anything." How old are you? Are you able to speak up? Are you able to stand up in the face of opposition? Are you able in your peers, among your peers, and with peer pressure, are you able to stand up and say, "One thing I know"? Well, two questions will have to be asked. One, has anything happened to you that you can talk about? When you are among your peers, has anything happened to you prior to this confrontation to where you can say, "Well, one thing I know, whereas I used to cheat and I used to curse and I used to drink and I used to fornicate, whereas I used to do all these things, I don't do them anymore. I've been saved." And then you'll have to know whether or not you believe Jesus Christ is of God. Can you say, I know one thing? If this man was not from God, if he were not from God, he could do nothing? You need to answer this question. Are you willing to stand up and say so? You may not know everything. You may not know all the scriptures in the Bible on how to become a Christian. You may not know how to convince anybody and convert them to the deity of Jesus Christ. You may not know how to convince them of his lordship, but I know one thing you can do. You can stand up whenever the peer pressure, and there are groups of you, there are pockets all over this campus of people who exercise a peer pressure that's not good. Pockets, and that's a medical term for something that's not very nice. Pockets. When you come among these pockets and you find that they're your peers, can you stand up in the face of this opposition and they say to you virtually, if any one of you confesses that this man is the Christ, you're going to be put out of our midst. You're not going to be one of us. Can you stand up and say, well, one thing I know, that whereas I was filthy, now I'm clean. And whereas I was a curser and a swearer, now I speak words of truth and beauty. And I know that if Jesus were not from God, he couldn't do anything. And if they put you out of their midst, so what? If you'll just go on out of their midst, you know who will follow you and find you like he found this man here? Jesus of Nazareth will come looking for you. And he'll ask you, in effect, do you believe on the Son of Man? And this man said, who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him? Jesus said, you've seen him, and he it is that's speaking to you. And you can fall down and worship before God, just like this man fell down and worshiped in appreciation. Let me reduce these four things to four words. He was old enough to know that he needed help. He was old enough to take instruction. He was old enough to know that something had been done for him. And he was old enough to speak out. Here are the four words that these things represent, and you'll see them immediately. First of all, he was old enough to know that he needed help. That's humility. He was old enough to take instructions. That's submission. He was old enough to know that something had been done for him. That's gratitude. He was old enough to speak out. That's conviction. Humility, submission, gratitude, and conviction. These are four definite signs of maturity. Now watch. If these things do not exist in your life in a visible and growing degree, about all that you can do to convince people and to claim that you're a man or a woman is to just point to your boutiques. That's about all you got going for you. I don't care what else you may have going for you. If you don't have humility and gratitude and thankfulness and all these things that we've mentioned, if you don't have these four qualities and conviction, you don't really have the signs of maturity. Today we're asking that you come forward to do that very thing. And all this week you'll be asked to come forward knowing that something needs to be done for you, knowing that you're a sinner. And then being willing to take instructions like Paul was, arise and be baptized and wash away your sin. Then knowing that something has been done for you, to be very grateful to God, thankful to him. And fourth, being willing to go out and tell others about it. That's all that Christianity is about. And it's all here in this one young man's life. And it ought to be in your life and my life. That's what the invitation is about this morning. Would you come while we stand and sing?